Hello everyone. Before I start this, just give you a bit of an idea of what it's all about. London investigator Slim Gunter, from this part of the world, very directly, only a few hundred yards from here, has been asked to investigate the death of a young man who's known by the nickname of Goose. Very early on in the book, he also gets invited to do another piece of work for someone who is a friend of an old client of his. And as we join this is chapter four, she's just been on the telephone and left him a message. Elizabeth Archer was not in the mood for small talk. She had a voice that cut through nonsense like a harpoon aimed at a passing narwhal. The message she'd left on my answering machine was on the rough side of brusque, which was okay with me. I didn't go a bundle on chatting anyway. With a pad on my desk and a pen in my hand, I played her message again and took some notes. She said she'd been recommended to me by a friend, which was nice, although the friend's name didn't exactly make me want to start singing Auld Lang Syne. I'd helped Estrella, in a manner of speaking, but the case had left her with a broken heart, some dead companions, including a small dog, and enough guilt to keep her going until the priest touched her forehead for the final time. Maybe that was why she'd passed my name on. The case had also left me with a lump out of my eyebrow and a bigger overdraft than when I'd started. I wrote down a local phone number, tapped out a one-note samba on my pad and looked at the clock in the corner of my screen. It was 9 o'clock in the morning and I had money in my wallet, what might be two jobs and a full cup of coffee. Things were looking up. Biddy speaking. The voice sounded slightly softer on the receiving end of a call, but she wasn't about to be invited to become the next speaking clock. Miss Archer, I tried to sound businesslike. My name is Gunter. Ah, yes, Gunter. We weren't friends yet, which might have been why I didn't get the honorific. Either that or Biddy was something of a stuffed shirt. Can I see you? I believe I find myself in want of assistance. Perhaps you do, I said. Would you care to tell me the nature of your problem? Certainly not over the telephone. That was confidential. I loved her already. I kept that to myself. The pause went on for a few beats of my heart. Well? The voice had acquired a more querulous tone. Can you help? I'm sorry, Miss Archer, I said. I was just seeing if telepathy would work, but I'm just not getting a signal. The lampshade has hardly moved at all. She said you thought yourself amusing. If only, Miss Archer. But if you don't tell me, even in an elliptical way, what the matter is, then I'm not going to spend any shoe leather on it. It was her turn to pause. Very well. The phone clicked in my ear. I took a sip of coffee and read a report about a football match that didn't interest me. I was wondering where Eddie had got to and thinking about Estrella when the phone clanged like the bell in the fire station. Like a faithful servant, I put my ear to it and said my name. Very well, Mr. Gunter. I'd been promoted. It's my husband. He's showing a tendency towards lacking fidelity, not truthful. How does 10 o'clock sound? I was as emollient as ice cream. 10 o'clock sounded fine. I took my hat and left Eddie a note before leaving the office. The Archer residence was in one of the roads at the north end of Gray's Inn, nearer to the dirty bricks of the railway station than the leafy court buildings further south. It was a tall house in the middle of a terrace, which made up for in height what it lacked widthways. I took my opposite problem and climbed a short set of stone steps and pushed on the doorbell, which was a piece of yellow Bakelite set into a black metal surround. The woman who opened the door wore severe glasses, a rope of blue beads that shouted exotic ethnicity, and a loose-fitting garment that might have been called a smock, a caftan, or a two-man tent. She wasn't fat, like some of us, just big. I could scrape 5 feet 8, She had at least half a foot on me and was built to scale. Her face was one that would have been called handsome, with a classically Roman nose, high forehead, and a full-lipped mouth smeared in a russet-coloured lipstick. Lines ran from just above her lips like tributaries on the Ordnance Survey maps. She'd waved goodbye to 50 a long time before, and looked as though she were glad of it. I held my hat in one hand and offered the other as if it were a peace offering. Should have kept the hat on, would have made me look a bit taller. Mrs. Archer, I said as she managed to ignore my hand. Slim Gunter. I didn't say at your service because I didn't need to. She already knew. I thought of the money and followed the sweep of her arm into a narrow hallway. Elizabeth shut the door and went past me into the room at the front of the house. I followed her in and stood on a polished wood floor. She showed me a broad back by putting both hands on a mantelpiece covered with carvings of African animals and miniature masks. She held the pose while I took in the rest of the view. A rattan sofa took up half of one wall, but was the only furniture in the room. The remainder of the floor was taken up with pot plants, cacti of all kinds, and earthenware urns. It was like a trendy garden centre. I shuffled on the spot and she turned round. The mouth moved into a smile, but it looked like it was being pushed into it. Mr. Gunter, thanks for coming. You may call me Biddy. I had nothing to say to that, even if it was big of her. Estrella speaks highly of you. Biddy held both hands together in front of her. Give her my best when you see her. I didn't much care if Estrella Wolf died or moved to Bexhill, but it seemed the right thing to say. She nodded and offered tea, which I turned down. I thought about sitting on the sofa, changed my mind, and just looked out the window at the street. Biddy didn't seem to know what to do next, and I wasn't about to prod the wasp's nest. After some seconds, which seemed to be playing at the wrong speed, she walked out the room without saying anything. A voice that sounded like mine said, "Ah, what the hell?" And I moved over to the sofa and took the weight off my brogues. When she came back, Biddy was carrying the sort of bag that looked like something made for nothing by a Costa Rican peasant and sold in English shops where you could ease suffering and conscience with a gold credit card. She also had a look that told me her sofa was not for sitting on without being invited. I stood up while she had a bit of a rummage, and then with something like a smile of triumph, she handed me a small, clear plastic envelope sealed at one end. Inside it was a rectangle of silver paper. I opened the envelope and pulled out the silver paper. It was about an inch deep and two wide and had the word pull embossed on it. I saw at least one of them every day, and sometimes more than that. Choking down the giggle forming in my throat, I handed her back the damning evidence. Is this his? My face was firmly in neutral, but I could feel a twitch in my cheek. Yes, at least I think so. I found it in his jacket. The lines that ran up from her lips didn't just tell tales against her smooth forehead. I would have bet at least a pack that she'd once smoked a fair few cigarettes herself. Excuse me if I'm being presumptuous. I took out my notebook, but I take it you want me to prove he's smoking or not, as the case may be. She nodded, the vertical lines looking deep enough to slide something thin into the gaps. Something like a fag paper. There's nothing like penitence for bringing vigour to a conviction. We talked a little more and I picked up a name, a work and a home address, some his and hers business cards and a picture of the unfaithful spouse. I ran Biddy through all the questions I could think of and she didn't seem upset by anything that I asked her, not even how much money they made. Biddy worked for a charity raising money for cancer sufferers. Derek, the husband, was some sort of market analyst, whatever that meant, and pulled in 70 grand a year out of an office near Holborn Underground. They'd no children but two dogs, which he walked round the parks in WC1. I'd probably seen him, or at least stepped in something that got left behind. Some of what she told me I scribbled into the notebook, but most of it would stick anyway. The book was just there to give me an air of authority, or something close to it, and it gave me somewhere to tuck away the snapshot she gave me. The man in the picture was bald, something he made up for with an unnecessary moustache. He looked straight at the camera, and I saw some white teeth under the soup strainer. It looked like an easygoing, pleasant grin, but anyone can do that in a photograph, even me. I had all the information tucked into my jacket. What I needed now was some motivation. I gave Biddy my best smile, and it had about as much impact as a snowflake landing on a bonfire. I also named a figure and watched her face turn into something that belonged on a plinth. Estrella said you were expensive as well as impertinent. I couldn't be certain, but I thought I saw a twinkle under a hooded eye. You ever had any plumbing done? Or dentistry? I looked up at her, the mongoose eyeing the cobra. Or paid a lawyer for writing a letter. Point taken. She was softening, but not quite as fast as the Arctic Circle. But I'm not a fool, and I won't take kindly to being treated like one. I could have kicked that around a little more, but one of the things I've been working on was learning that being in the right didn't amount to anything more than self-satisfied poverty. Getting my pride down got easier and easier each year. Now I hardly pause to chew it on its way through. Instead of arguing, I flashed some teeth and asked another question. What sort of dogs? Excuse me? She looked at me as though I'd asked what colour knickers she was wearing. Dogs? I resisted the urge to bark or pant. You said your husband wants dogs. I wondered what variety. Dalmatians. Brown and white. Is that pertinent? I bet they weren't allowed on the couch either. It all helps, I said. If I follow Derek, and I might need to, the dogs aren't a bad thing to know about. She looked doubtful, and not just about me and the dogs. I left Biddy Archer's with a cheque, not the cash I'd have preferred, a handshake I'd been feeling for an hour or two, and a nagging sensation. I couldn't see why she didn't just ask Derek about his dirty habit, or follow her herself one day. She could have got someone else to water the plants. The other thing that bothered me was that Biddy looked the part, like my old friend Estrella. She had the same clothes, the house full of foliage, and artifacts that spoke in a loud voice about holidays that were long on price and what people like to call authenticity. But Estrella had liked to think of herself as a bohemian, a free spirit. She'd even gone as far as holding swingers parties where people with too much money slipped their kaftans and their middle-class inhibitions and rolled around on her Turkish rugs. Somehow, I couldn't see Biddy Archer just wearing a smile and a spec chain in a room full of naked hippies with expense accounts. But that thought might have sprung from my own hang-ups. My partner Lady called me a prude when I declined to take my shirt off on the beach. I put it down to having a negative body image. But she might have had a point. I was more comfortable around mohair rather than birthday suits. Walking past the 60s shopping centre, I patted the cheque in my pocket and told myself to stop worrying about other people's head issues and get some work done instead. I passed a row of shops in a small street that had been left behind by the developers. The first one was an old-style funeral director's with a map of London from 1780, sitting alone behind a plate glass window etched with painted lettering. A clock sat in a square metal box fixed to the Victorian brickwork with a heavily painted black iron bracket. It told me that it was 10:30 in the morning, while the gold paint on the shopfront assured me I would get a sympathetic reaction, with flowers if I needed them. I wondered if Goose had been given the blooms and eulogy treatment, with the hesitant vicar mouthing words that talked of earth and resting places. I should have asked his mother about the funeral. It would have been good to know who'd turned up, who'd sobbed at the graveside, or thrown a handful of dust onto the mahogany-lidded box. But I hadn't asked, and didn't feel like going over old covered ground. Besides, there might not have been a service at all, just a bored counter worker in Honor Oak or Golders Green, sliding a plain deal coffin along a cold conveyor belt, while the mother, Prudence Chase, waited in a simply decorated room, wondering where to scatter the remains of her son. Next to the funeral director's, there was a nail painting salon with a bright green board standing outside on the pavement. Brighten up your life, it read in vivid yellow print. Some drops of rainwater tapped on the brim of my hat as I walked past. Thank you.